ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good morning. Welcome to AM. It's Tuesday, the 23rd of December. I'm Sabra Lane, coming to you from Nipaluna, Hobart. Court documents, including photos and videos, show the government allegedly responsible for last week's Bondi terrorist attack spent months planning and training for the massacre in which 15 people were killed. The photos show the father and son allegedly training with guns in late October. Police say their location's in regional New South Wales. The alleged 24-year-old gunman recorded a video explaining his justification for the attack, condemning the acts of Zionists. Ted O'Connor has more.
The Bondi terrorist attack not only involved months of preparation by the alleged gunman, but it also could have been even worse, according to court documents unveiled on Monday. They show in late October, father and son Naveed and Sajid Akram trained with guns in a regional area. And days before the attack, they scoped the Bondi location. But a redacted police statement of facts also says the men threw four improvised bombs towards the crowd. Luckily, none went off.
Building a bomb that will successfully detonate is a significant skill.
Dr. Josh Bruce researches extremism and terrorism at Deakin University.
It demonstrates quite quickly that they're not particularly proficient, but that they had the confidence to try. The question is, did they receive any formal instruction in bomb making? Or was this one of the recipes pulled off the internet?
More has also been revealed about the alleged gunman's recent trip to the Philippines, where investigators are trying to determine if they made contact with Islamic State operatives to receive military training. The ABC spoken to staff at a hotel who say the men stayed there, but were mostly holed up in their room and only went out for about an hour a day. Josh Roos again.
It'd be extraordinarily difficult to locate Islamic State actors in the Philippines if you didn't know who to reach out to and where to be at what time. So it is likely that they had some form of connection or some form of introduction. The extent to which that occurred immediately or over a period of time, or whether it occurred at all, will need to come out in the inquiry.
Police say they also have videos of the Bondi gunmen making statements, reciting their political and religious views, and summarising their justification for the terrorist attack. In it, they condemn Zionists. David Zluki is the director of the Australian Centre for Jewish Civilisation at Monash University. He says research shows most Jewish people identify as being Zionist.
Zionism can mean many things. It can mean total fealty to the State of Israel and its government and not questioning its decisions. And for others, it can mean a sort of attachment to Israel, but like a real commitment to holding governments accountable very publicly. And it can kind of be different visions for what that state might look like.
But he says where it becomes frightening for Jews is when people who say they're against Zionism use dangerous rhetoric, something that's become all too common since the October 7 attacks.
To kind of say, well, if you're a Zionist, you're a terrorist, or you're a baby killer, like normalising this kind of public discourse is really bad for our democracy. It's really dangerous for the target population because it's dehumanising.
The release of the court documents comes as Naveed Akram was moved from hospital to a correctional facility. The 24-year-old faces 59 charges, including 15 counts of murder and one count of committing a terrorist act. His father was shot dead by police during the shooting.
Ted O'Connor reporting there. The federal government's promising a crackdown on extremism following the Bondi attack, with the Prime Minister apologising for what the Jewish community experienced last week. But he's resisting calls for a royal commission and pushing back against strident coalition criticism. The Jewish community is praising the New South Wales Premier Chris Minns for promising a wide-ranging state-based royal commission, with the state's lower house passing the country's strongest gun and anti-protest laws. Angus Randall reports.
59 votes for the ayes and only 15 votes for the noes, I declare the motion carried.
The New South Wales lower house passes changes to its anti-protest and firearms laws after securing enough support from Labor and Liberal MPs. The bill will go to the state's upper house today. But still, it's no united front. The Nationals are against gun reform over how it might affect farmers, while the National Farmers Federation president, Hamish McIntyre, says it needs more detail.
What we're saying is, We always support reform, but a caution against any rushed, heavy-handed changes that create any unintended consequences for farmers and the people that work with us all around Australia to help control pests that are controlled by using firearms.
There are also concerns over sections of the bill that would give police greater powers to ban protests for 3 months in the wake of a terror attack and remove face coverings of protesters. Anastasia Radievska is from the Australian Democracy Network.
We absolutely recognise the deep hurt and fear across the community. The issue with the way that the Premier has characterised the causes and appropriate actions in relation to that attack is that there hasn't been any evidence linking the anti-genocide protests with the terror attack. And people have been making irresponsible assertions while a police investigation is still underway.
Alongside the proposed law changes, Premier Chris Minns is also considering who will head a New South Wales Royal Commission into the Bondi attack. Many within the Jewish community back this, calling for Prime Minister Anthony Albanese to establish a federal Royal Commission into the attack and anti-Semitism, something the PM is refusing to do.
The idea that we would have multiple Royal Commissions as well as a review running at the same time is going to simply delay action.
He says a review into federal law enforcement and intelligence agencies is more effective, while a royal commission would take years. But opposition leader Susan Lee says this isn't enough and wants a royal commission that would encompass counter-terrorism too.
There can be no more distractions, no more excuses, no more diversions. We must confront the real cause of the horror that occurred at Bondi, anti-Semitism, and especially in this case, extreme Islamic anti-Semitism.
The federal government has also announced law reforms, increasing penalties for some hate speech and creating a new offence for adults who seek to radicalise children. Victoria is also planning similar anti-protest laws to New South Wales to be introduced next year.
Angus Randall there. Michelle Rowland is the Federal Attorney General and she sits at the National Security Committee of Cabinet Table. Attorney General, thanks for joining AM.
Pleasure.
Before we discuss the government's proposed changes, the former High Court Chief Justice Robert French intervened in the debate on the weekend about inquiries into the Bondi massacre, saying a Commonwealth-led Royal Commission was needed and there was a moral imperative to do so. Did Cabinet or National Security Committee of Cabinet discuss his advice?
Well, firstly, can I start by expressing my condolences to the victims, the families and friends and all Australians who've been impacted by this horrific act of terrorism against not only our Jewish community, but on our Australian way of life as well. I won't specifically go to what is discussed, obviously, in Cabinet and NSC, but I will say this, that the focus of this government is on action in the wake of this terrible tragedy. And I note that there are stakeholders who have views on a Royal Commission. What I will say is that there is a Royal Commission that is going to be undertaken. New South Wales has made that clear, and all cooperation and information as will be required by that Royal Commission will be provided by the Commonwealth. And in particular, the rapid review being undertaken by Richardson, which will report in April next year, will be an important part of that.
You are the nation's first legal officer. Did you consider the merits of Justice French's arguments?
Reasonable minds will differ. And we've seen that as well, including some of the commentary by Brett Walker, for example, who is very well respected. And he notes that the duplicity of a Royal Commission being done in tandem with New South Wales is one that is may have questionable merit. And also some of these questions about what a state Royal Commission would be able to achieve.
Still, to the point of the question, did you even consider his argument or did you just dismiss it outright?
As I said, this is a government that is focused on delivery and on action. And we have made it clear that we will be undertaking a comprehensive response. And in terms of having a Royal Commission, one is being undertaken. And the government has a policy imperative here and an imperative from the community to take action, not to spend years undertaking an inquiry to determine what may need to be done. We know that things need to be done. We need to get to a landing on some of those issues that are being examined by Richardson, which will report not in years, but in April next year. And that is what we are focused on.
To the package of reforms the government's suggesting, if they'd been in place since the October the 7th atrocities in Israel, how many people would police have pursued through the courts here? Would it have stopped the Bondi attack?
Well, I can't answer that in terms of hypotheticals. What I can say is in the previous term, and as has been implemented this year, the government has had a substantial package of reform when it comes to hate speech and also action on things like doxing. But we have seen that there is hateful rhetoric that has escalated, and that culminated last Sunday in this appalling act that claimed innocent lives. What is clear here is that there needs to be some significant changes to the Commonwealth criminal law. And I will say to your listeners that this will test the limits of what is legally permissible. But the outcome here is to ensure that we have a situation where we do not have hate speech that targets even one group alone, but ensures that we have the capacity to address extremists who are operating just within the limits of the law. So they craft rhetoric below the criminal threshold. They can, for example, display prohibited symbols under the guise of ignorance, and in particular, radicalising children at alarming rates.
Well, just this on that point, just on that point alone, you're saying that they operate just below the law. Well, how many people then would police or ASIO have pursued if these laws had been in place since 2023?
Well, again, I can't answer in terms of hypotheticals here, but we have done the analysis, we have done the consultation.
But if you've done the analysis, surely you would know. I'm sorry.
Well, let me tell you this. If you want some numbers, I'll tell you this. There's been 120 people convicted of terrorism offences since 2001. And in that period, 10 of them were children. Today, we've got 17 of the 33 individuals before the courts are minors. That gives you an indication of the unprecedented and deeply concerning trend in the rise of radicalisation in young people. This is a time when we need unity and we need urgency, and we need the Parliament to come together to support these changes.
With the proposed law targeting adults who seek to radicalise children, again, how frequently would they have been used during the past 2 years?
Well, again, I cannot answer in hypotheticals and I won't attempt to. We know, as I have just outlined to you in the statistics that we have, and we know also from the warnings that our security agencies have provided us about the ease of radicalisation that happens particularly in the online environment, that this is an area that needs to be addressed. That is why we are taking action, and we call on the entire Parliament to support this.
The Prime Minister said yesterday at the media conference that you were at that ASIO and the AFP chiefs spoke with Cabinet yesterday about the lessons learnt. What are those lessons?
Well, again, I'm not going to go into the detail of that, just as the Prime Minister didn't go into detail yesterday. But what I will say is that it is very clear that there are actions that need to be taken, and that is reflected in the package that we have announced as a Cabinet.
Attorney General Michelle Rowland, thanks for joining AM.
Pleasure.
Michelle Rowland is the Federal Attorney General. United States Coast Guards chasing another sanctioned oil tanker that the Trump administration's describing as part of the shadow fleet that Venezuela's using to dodge US sanctions. The Coast Guard seized a tanker over the weekend, and this is now the third ship being pursued. It's part of Donald Trump's efforts to increase pressure on Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro. Nicole Johnston reports.
Venezuela is in the crosshairs of US President Donald Trump. The US is targeting its drug trafficking network, claiming it's run by the government of President Nicolas Maduro. The result? High drama on the high seas. US Coast Guard units have boarded tankers carrying Venezuelan crude oil. It's happening outside Venezuela's territorial waters, but its government and China argue it violates freedom of navigation. Vanessa Neumann is a former Venezuelan diplomat who focuses on organized crime and paramilitaries. She's now president of a political risk company called Asymmetrica.
US President Donald Trump is obviously ramping up pressure on the Maduro dictatorship. And he is treating it as he is cutting off the financing and is therefore treating it as a combination of what it is, which is a foreign terrorist organization that is in bed with various terrorist organizations, Hezbollah being the main one, and also is a transnational criminal organization, which is a drug cartel.
Are these interceptions likely to work in terms of disrupting the drug cartels?
They will work, but not that quickly. So normally when you're facing a drug cartel, and we know this from having worked a number of CTOC, counter transnational organized crime, you work multilaterally very quickly to destabilize the financing, the transportation, logistics, and sort of the middle management. But certainly managing the financing, which is along three lines: illicit oil, narcotics, and illicit gold.
A lot of this, of course, has focused on the drug cartel issue, but it's also about the shadow fleet of oil tankers that is moving around the world, continuing to supply oil from Venezuela, from Russia. How significant is Venezuela's role in the global shadow fleet?
It's enormous. The world is awash in oil. Venezuela's oil exports are increasingly unimportant to the world supply, but they're of vital importance to the dictatorship. By stopping the oil shipments, it isolates, it also destabilizes Cuba and also China. China is the major buyer of Venezuelan illicit oil.
Former Venezuelan diplomat Vanessa Neumann speaking there with Nicole Johnston. Australia's endangered sea and shorebirds face an impending threat to their survival, one with no cure. Circling for years, the deadly H5N1 strain of bird flu is now closer than ever. The international experience proves its arrival will be the beginning of a long fight to contain the damage. Nicole Hegarty reports.
It's a noisy welcome on the Isle of May off Scotland's east coast. This 1.5 kilometre long island is a crucial breeding ground in summer months. Its burrows and cliffs play host to hundreds of thousands of puffins, razorbills, kittiwakes and guillemots. David Steele is the reserve's manager.
We have a third largest puffin colony. We have 52,000 pairs of puffins on this island.
But the cacophony of noise is quickly interrupted by a stark warning, scrawled on an A-frame blackboard. It warns visitors the deadly H5N1 strain of bird flu is still present on the island 3 years after it forced the reserve to temporarily close. Today, before excited visitors are free to explore the wonder, they must step on a wash mat to disinfect their shoes. It's a small extra step to try and contain the H5N1 strain of avian influenza, which has killed hundreds of millions of seabirds worldwide and spread to other animals, including seals and cattle. David Steele again.
We collected over 148 corpses of birds which had just died in the last 5 days.
It's a scenario scientists say is about to become a reality for Australia after the strain was confirmed in elephant seals on Heard Island, a remote Australian territory 4,000 kilometres southwest of Perth late last month. Dr. Fiona Fraser is Australia's Threatened Species Commissioner.
Once it reaches here, we will not be able to prevent its spread in nature and we will not be able to eradicate it in nature.
The Australian government has announced more than $100 million in funding for H5N1 bird flu preparedness, surveillance and response. The hope is to reduce its spread and give animals the best chance of survival. But for some species, like the Christmas Island frigate bird, the outlook is particularly bleak. Queensland's Moreton Bay Marine Park west of Brisbane is a first port of call for the endangered migratory species like the Far Eastern curlew.
So it's here on the shoreline, we can see some bar-tail godwits there feeding, probing their long beaks into the mud.
Professor Richard Fuller is from the University of Queensland and says their long journey leaves the birds in a precarious position.
Far Eastern curlew has declined by 80% in 30 years. That is a horrendous level of decline. It's a species that's hurtling towards extinction.
Back in Scotland, a team of dedicated researchers have made a breakthrough. Reserve manager David Steele says some birds are starting to show immunity.
Antibodies are being found in their blood system. Other birds are starting to build it up as well.
Promising signs for a species under threat.
Nicole Hegarty reporting there. And that's AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm Sabra Lane.